organizers to invite me. It was a great conference so far. So as Nilima said a couple of times, we're going to hear a lot about the KSC right now. And this is work that has been done almost exclusively at Perimeter, except for Simone, who's at Berkeley. And it's, so it's work with Utkarsh, who is a PhD student here, Matt and Kendrick. And so I'm going to start with explaining what KSC tomography actually means, and then more towards the end, I'll explain what we can do with it for cosmology. So as Nilima already pointed out, after you clean out the frequency-dependent things in the CMB, you are left with these contributions here. And so here you have the primary CMB. Then if the primary CMB were not lensed, it would look like this. But due to lensing, here you get extra power that goes out to high L. And then there's this other effect, the KSC, that I'll explain in a moment, which comes up here at around 4,000 or so, and then actually becomes the dominant anisotropy. So experiments that measure out here will be dominated by lensing and the KSC effect. And what we want to do is to see what we can do with that. So the primary anisotropy is, of course, constrained things in the primordial universe, but that are important in particular there, like omega B, omega C, NS, R. Then lensing gets you neutrino masses, sigma 8, which are more late-time quantities. Now the question is, what can we do with all these anisotropies here for cosmology? So the KSC effect, the KSC effect, as Nilima already said, is that CMB photons are rescattered on electrons, and these electrons are moving, which is why it's the kinetics SC effect. And so they're moving in a bulk. This is as opposed to the thermal movements that are called the TSC. And the equation, so this equation you'll need a couple of times in the talk to understand what we are doing. So the KSC temperature anisotropy is basically the product of the electron density times the radial velocity. And one way to think about the KSC is in terms of a Doppler shift. So if the electrons are moving away from us, then the photons are redshifted and you get a cold spot, and vice versa. All right. So now what is KSC tomography? So one thing, of course, you can measure is the order power spectrum of the KSC, and people measure that and have some information. But for cosmology, much more interesting is the cross-correlation between the CMB and galaxies, or large-scale structure in general. And this is what we call KSC tomography, the cross-correlation of the CMB, the Ts, with the galaxies here, delta G. And so it turns out the direct cross-correlation actually vanishes, and that is because the velocities can be positive or negative, and on average, this cancels out. So what you are really interested in is then the first non-trivial thing is the three-point function here. So this three-point function we are interested in is with two powers of the galaxies or any other large-scale tracer and one power of the CMB here. And as you know, so this is called the bispectrum in cosmology usually, and there's some delta function conservation that has to do with statistical isotropy. And just one comment on notation. So we are actually going to working in what we call a box approximation, which is in principle is a flat sky approximation. So there's the CMB kind of lives. It's like a 2D slice, and then the KSC you get is a radial integral over the box of galaxies that we look at. So this is a geometric approximation that makes some things easier, but it's not in any way fundamental to what we are doing. So this is why. So T of L here is actually, this is actually a 2D vector in principle. So this would be on the sphere. Okay. So now to do anything with that, of course, we need to know what this bispectrum actually is here. And of course, it would be nice if we could calculate it exactly. And so it's given by this four-point function, where this is the electron density and this is the radial velocity field. But this is in the deeply nonlinear regime, so you cannot exactly calculate this. And we made an approximation, which is that we just considered a tree level at first. And then in tree level, this bispectrum is given by this equation here. And then actually for these power spectra that enter here, I'll explain them in a moment, we use the full nonlinear power spectrum. So it's not exactly a tree level. And it turns out that this ansatz actually is really good. So it captures the full answer that we know from n-body simulations up to a few percent. And the reason why this ansatz is so good, even though the whole thing is really nonlinear, is that the bispectrum is totally totally dominated by the squeezed limit. So the triangles for which the bispectrum is large is where you have like small scale KSC, and then there's and large scale, these are basically the velocities here, so large scale velocities and small scale galaxies again. And these dominate the signal to noise, and then like the shape of the bispectrum is very constrained from that. And the reason why that is that the KSC simply is an effect at high L, and the velocities that also go in the KSC are something that is large on large scales. So, and from these arguments, you find that. Okay, and so you don't actually have to remember what this bispectrum looks like at all. The only thing you should remember is that the bispectrum is given has these two terms in it. So it's the product of these two quantities, PGE and PGV. So PGE is the cross power between galaxies and electrons. And PGV is the cross power between the galaxies and the velocity field. And in fact, the PGE we want at small scales, while this one here we want at large scales. So this is the squeezed limit that we are having here. And so in terms of astrophysics, this PGE just tells you how electrons and galaxies are correlated. And they live in the same halo, so where we have many galaxies, there are many electrons, basically. And so this is the part from astrophysics, since the distribution of electrons in a halo is an astrophysical quantity. Well, this here is the large scale, like tells you the large scale velocity field. Yeah, and this is what we are after for cosmology, actually. So this is where our parameter measurements are coming from that we'll look at now. There's one last thing to notice, which is that the bispectrum is the same if you trade a constant factor from here to here, back and forth. And so this has some consequences for what sort of things you can constrain with this method. So we call this the KSC optical depth degeneracy. Yeah, so the nice thing once you have a bispectrum in cosmology is that bispectrum estimation is really well understood. So this is something in the CMB that is done all the time. So there are a lot of tools that have been developed. For example, you immediately know that if you have if you know the bispectrum, you immediately know what the optimal estimator is for this bispectrum. And it's basically given by summing over all the triangles weighted by their signal to noise. So you have this optimal estimator. And yeah, we get this estimator from this procedure with very little effort. And then we also know how we can include certain systematic effects, for example, photo Z errors. Okay, and it turns out that actually this bispectrum estimator is like a big summary of all sorts of previous work that had been done on the KSC effect. So there are several groups before have developed estimators to detect the KSC, which were based on cross-correlating the KSC with galaxies. This has the advantage that for one thing you get redshift information into your system, and the other, and also, so the galaxies of course trace you the electrons, so you increase the signal to noise by cross-correlating with something with a high signal to noise. And yeah, so we show that several previous estimators actually, if used optimally, are equivalent to the bispectrum formalism that we have, or are special cases of it. And I can't explain how all of these work, but I give you one example how this might work, how these things can be equivalent. So for example, there's something called the KSC template method. And the idea here was, okay, we want to detect the KSC with current experiments where the KSC is not yet as large, so where it's not dominating, so you need a cross-correlation. So the first thing they do here was we construct a template for the velocities from a galaxy survey. Let's call this a V hat here. Then the second step is we construct a template for the electron distribution. Let's call this delta E. And these are basically, by filtering the galaxy catalog in an optimal way, you get these templates. And then the KSC template is, roughly speaking, the product of these two. I mean, there's an integral over line of sight, of course. But so you get this product. And then to finally detect the KSC, what they do, they take this artificial KSC template and cross-correlate it with the real CMB. And this is the statistic to find to detect the KSC. And if you look at this, you see that this is actually So this delta D, this delta G, and this TCMB is exactly the bispectrum that we have been looking at before. So this is how this template method is equivalent to this bispectrum estimator. And there's a similar argument for other estimators that look very different, but turn out to be exactly this. All right, so before we go to actual cosmology, I just want to show one slide about astrophysics of the KSC. So as we've seen, the bispectrum that we measure has this term PGE in it. And this PGE is the cross power of galaxies and electrons. And actually, this is dominated by the one halo term. So for those of you who know these things, so the halo model, you can calculate such cross power spectra at nonlinear scales of the halo model. And the ingredient for that is both you need kind of the profile of galaxies in the halo and the profile of electrons in the halos. So that for galaxies is called the halo occupation distribution. And for electrons, you need some pressure profile. And then if you assume these, then you can calculate this PGE. Of course, you need to know the HOD and you need this, need to know the electron profile. By measuring now PGE, of course, we can infer things about these two things, especially about the electron profile. And this here is a plot how well you could measure this. So here you have PGE, this cross-color spectrum, and here these are the scales that we are probing. Here are the error bars on this. And actually here this would be, in blue would be the one halo term, and this would be a two halo term here, which is then subdominant. And you can see that we get really tight error bars in the small range of k's here. And that means that in this small range of k's, we can measure PGE really well. And this is interesting for astrophysics. So this is one thing you can do with the KSC, and this is something Matt has mentioned that will seem to be that this is a way how you get information of the distribution of baryons from the KSC. All right. Good, so this was kind of what KSC tomography is, but this was not yet very useful for cosmology. And what we want to do for cosmology is one specific application, which is called the KSC velocity reconstruction. And this is kind of a new thing that had not been previously proposed. But it turns out that it's also a special case of this bispectrum formalism. So this is how these two things connect. But I want to motivate it a little bit different and less mathematical way. So again, we have here this equation with the KSC. There's the CMB KSC is the line of sight integral over these two quantities with some scattering cross-section, of course. And now the idea here is the following. So we have the CMB, so this will measure us. We measure the KSC from the CMB. Then we infer like an electron template from the galaxies. By assuming that galaxies trace halos and these trace electrons. And then if we measure these two here from data, then we can write down an estimator for this quantity here, for the radial velocity field. And now you could wonder why we would do that, since before we said we could also build a template for the radial velocities from galaxies themselves. And there is a good reason to do that, and it actually turns out that This estimate here will be the lowest signal-to-noise reconstruction of large scales that we have. So it will have less noise than the galaxy field itself. So the galaxies are a less good tracer of the large-scale meta distribution than this KSC method that I'm discussing. And how this happens, I'm going to explain in the next slides. The way how to construct such a thing formally is the quadratic estimator that's used in many parts of cosmology. So a quadratic estimator means you take a quadratic combination of all your data, of all your Fourier vectors and the data. So this would be the galaxy distribution, and this would be the CMB temperature. And you sum them all up with some optimal weights that you can derive from the cross-correlation or from the bispectrum that we saw before. So this is the quadratic estimator. As I said, it's just a sum over all these combinations. And like one way to think about that is that we want to infer from the stochastic small scale field, we want to infer a non-stochastic large scale background field, which is here the velocities. So this is like in the CMB, when you do CMB lensing estimation, you also reconstruct the large-scale lensing potential from the small-scale CMB fluctuations. So it works exactly the same, only that in this case here, we don't, in the CMB lensing case, you have two powers of t, while here you have a power of delta g and a power of t. Okay, and now when we have this quadratic estimator, of course, we can calculate the noise of our reconstruction. And this noise here has some interesting properties. And in particular, it turns out that this noise does not actually depend on the wave vector KL here. So it's constant in KL, similar to the shot noise in galaxies, which is where the galaxy power shot noise is a constant in KL. So and this is also true here for this velocity reconstruction. And the noise depends on a couple of quantities that we've already seen. So on this, like how well do galaxies trace electrons, basically, on this PGE. Then it depends on the total number of galaxies we have. So this includes the shot noise of our survey, of course. And then it depends on the CMB, CL, so the noise of the CMB experiment, which is why we need something like Simon's Observatory or even better CMB in HD. And then there's another interesting feature, which is that we can only reconstruct the, we cannot reconstruct the transverse modes, only modes with the radial component. And this is, as I said, since the KSC is a trace of radial, of the radial velocity field. So we cannot reconstruct the velocity field in the universe for all Fourier vectors. We can only reconstruct them for the radial part of these. So this noise here blows up for transverse modes. So as I said, the key thing here to remember is that this KL does not actually appear in the expression, so it's constant in KL. So now comes the second crucial step to make this a good tracer of large-scale structure, and the thing is that since we are reconstructing this velocity field on large scales, we can use linear perturbation theory, basically the continuity equation, to relate these velocities, vr, that we just reconstructed, to the galaxy, to the matter perturbations delta. So this is the continuity equation, is just this factor here, this FAH, k over FAH. This is just from the continuity equation. And this factor is this geometric radial, the fact that you only get radial velocities again. So this is the important part here. And so if you plug then this equation into our noise equation, then you'll find that the noise for the matter reconstruction here has this factor k square in it. So it's the NVV noise, which is constant in KL, times this k square factor. And that from this you can see that the noise for this reconstructed density perturbations from the velocity field goes as k square. And for that reason, it's clear that at the largest scales, at some point, it will beat galaxy shot noise, since galaxy shot noise for delta here is constant and is 1 over ng, which is the galaxy density. So on large scales, the KSC velocities will win. Let's make a plot of that, how this looks in practice. So this is a plot now for upcoming experiments. So this is the matter power spectrum here, simply. I forget about the orange line here. So the blue line is the matter power spectrum, or the galaxy power spectrum, which are related by a bias factor. This here would be the shot noise from DESI. So this is how well DESI can measure at the scale. This is the shot noise. And here, this is what comes from our KSC reconstruction, we are on large scales here, as you can see, right? So these are very small Fourier vectors. And you can see that here, our reconstruction here for radial modes has this k-square behavior. So in this entire range from here to here, actually, we get lower noise with this KSC reconstruction on the matter power spectrum than we get from the galaxy shot noise. So this is a really cool probe. And now, of course, we want to see what we can do with that. So, yeah, let me recall, let me summarize this by comparing this to lensing again. So here with the KSC, we found another large-scale tracer that comes from small-scale CMB perturbations. So in addition to lensing, we used the KSC.
Can I go back to this, the galaxy shot?
Yeah.
So are you just plotting the power spectrum of galaxies, or the error induced in the power spectrum of velocity from the shot noise in galaxies? I guess that's what is the vertical axis here?
The vertical, whether this is the matter power spectrum or the galaxy power spectrum. Yeah, these are, so there's of course a bias factor in between the two, which is an order one number, so it's...
There are ways of getting rid of shot noise,
ways of getting...
Different ways of, different types of galaxies with each other.
You mean for the sample variance cancellation stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this would be... This is another subject, but the certain quantities you can do sample variance cancellation. But for measuring simply the amplitude of the power spectrum, the shot noise is really there. You're not going to sample variance cancellation the error bars.
So you can't use sample variance cancellation to remove shot noise.
Yeah.
The limitation on sample variance cancellation is shot noise.
But I guess if you have multiple tracers, then if you correlate them, the shot noise don't have to be correlated, so...
Yeah, and therefore shot noise limits you.
If you have some known analytic, relation between these two galaxy species, then you can constrain this analytic relation, but the overall power spectrum amplitude is stochastic. Imagine you have one galaxy type where you get 10 galaxies to measure them out, and then you get another galaxy type where you get another 10 galaxies. You will still then you have 20 galaxies to measure the power on smoke.
I agree,
there is no
limitation, but you can go below the formal shot noise itself, because I guess you have different ways of measuring it with multiple modes from different galaxies. Now I agree it still limits you, but I'm not sure. I don't think it's a naive limit.
I don't think that's right. So Andy, for the amplitude of really of the power spectrum is a stochastic quantity. I don't think you can measure the power spectrum better than shot noise.
Okay.
Wow. So Roche has some papers where he tries to reconstruct the matter field weighting different galaxies.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
So formally, that's true. If you can measure every single particle in the universe, you could, remove shot noise. But in practice, I think you're often limited by the shot noise in the lowest luminosity in other galaxies.
I agree there would be limitations, but I think you can do a little bit better than just the naive shot noise.
Okay, physically, I guess it seems reasonable, because shot noise is kind of maximally agnostic about where the galaxies are formed within. So if you have, I guess, so in principle, it seems possible. But anyway, so then the nice thing, as I said, is that we get this very low noise on this reconstruction here compared to galaxy shot noise. And let me again say, so this is like in lensing, we get a large-scale probe from small-scale CMB physics, and what's interesting is that here we get the radial modes, while with the lensing we actually get the transverse modes. So these are complementary to each other. They're also complementary in other aspects, but this is one thing. And so it's a very interesting new probe that is really newly developed and that is only possible now, but already with upcoming data, and that's not really explored well. So there are lots of possible things you could do with that nobody may have thought about so far. So it's a very nice new probe that we don't have to wait for 20 years to make it work, but the upcoming things are with Simons Observatory, you can already reconstruct velocities with this. All right. So now we would like to do something more concrete than getting this velocity map, and to see what we can do with this velocity map. And there is one thing that that is particularly striking, a particularly good application, basically. And this is the application to primordial non-Gaussianity. So many of you, I guess, know this. So there is this effect that Neil, in particular, is well known for, is that of scale-dependent bias. So this is the matter power spectrum. Then the galaxy power spectrum is related by some bias factor that's constant on large scales. So this would be a matter power spectrum. And it turns out, if you have local non-Gaussianities, so this which are parameterized by this FNL parameter, then this leads to the power, having a k-square kick off at the largest scale. So you add a lot of power on the largest scales. And physically, that is because local non-Gaussianities is a large-scale modulation of small-scale power. So if you have a large, like a underlying large mode, then the small scale power on top of this large mode will be boosted. And this helps putting galaxies or halos over the halo formation threshold, and this leads to this effect here. And this is like the main effect that galaxy surveys are after when they want to constrain FNL. And this effect is the reason why it's hoped that with galaxy surveys in the future, one can do better on primordial non-Gaussianities than with CMB experiments. And this is specific to these local non-Gaussianities, to this shape here. So currently with the CMB, the sigma FNL is roughly 5. So it's far away from 1. And there's something that a theorist target, which is called the multi-field inflation threshold. So theorists say that FNL bigger than 1 would indicate the presence of multi-field inflation, and lower than 1 would speak for single-field inflation. But of course, this is kind of a soft target. But nevertheless, this is a theory target that is given to observers often that you want to boost the FNL constraint lower than FNL of 1. Okay, and so now there's one thing. So the KSC velocities, as I said, can measure the power spectrum on large scales better than the CMB, but better than galaxies. So this speaks for using them for this FNL thing. But I at first thought that it would not be possible to do this at all, because the KSC velocities probe the total matter field. So the velocities are sourced by all the matter in the universe, by their gravitational attraction. So they do not probe just the galaxy field, but the total matter field. So it seems that the FNL effect in this reconstructed velocity field would be 0. And then would be useless, of course. But it turns out that this is thinking too simple, and actually the KSC velocities do help a lot. And the process in which this is happening is, so you need another idea for this, which is the sample variance cancellation that Nyayesh has just talked about. And the idea here is the following. So imagine this here is the matter mode here. This here would be like all the matter, the Fourier mode for all the matter. And we know that the galaxy mode on large scales is related by this bias factor here. So if the bias is bigger than 1, the galaxy perturbation is larger than that. And we have this additional effect here of FNL that comes in here. Now, each of these modes here, so for each single Fourier mode, the amplitude is stochastic. So there is no prediction on how large a single K mode actually is. But there is a non-stochastic prediction, which is that the relation of the same Fourier mode measured for galaxies and for total matter is given by this quantity here. So as you can see, so if you could measure a single Fourier mode of galaxy, the same Fourier modes for galaxies and for the total matter without any noise, then you could measure this quantity here exactly. And you would need a two different case to tell the BG and the FNL apart from each other. But that means if you have two modes and you would have them completely without noise, then you could measure FNL already exactly from it. And this is basically the idea of sample variance cancellation. Now, practice, of course, it's never this good, because you always get these modes here with noise. So sample variance cancellation is never exact. You always want to add many modes. But this is the fundamental idea. So on these large scales here, the power spectrum error bars are not usually dominated by the shot noise. They're dominated by cosmic variance, like in the CMB. The error bars on large scales go up because there simply are not more modes in the universe that you can measure, and it doesn't matter how small you make the noise on these modes. But if you have a quantity that's non-stochastic, like the relation of these two modes, then measuring these modes smaller and smaller gives you smaller and smaller error bars. And then there is no cosmic variance limit on FNL anymore in this sense. So so this is what's meant by canceling sample variance. So how do we do this in practice? So we made a Fourier forecast, of course. So the input for this Fourier forecast now are these reconstructed velocities that come from KSC and galaxies that probe us this mode delta M here, and then the galaxy modes here that probe the delta G mode. So this is our data. These can, in principle, these galaxies could come from different surveys also, if that boosts signal to noise. And then to make this forecast, you will have, you need these cross power spectra, of course. And here I just want to point out what we marginalize over. So a free parameter in our forecast is the galaxy bias as a function of redshift. So we do not assume this known, of course, since this is very poorly constrained. Then we also have we have a usual redshift distortion term here, this one. Then there is this optical depth degeneracy that I discussed before. This is this parameter BV here that we marginalize over. This means that we cannot measure absolute velocities with the KSC effect. We get them only up to an overall constant that is given by fundamentally, this comes from that we don't know how many electrons are in the cluster. So if there were more electrons, then we get more KSC. But if there's more velocity, we also get more KSC. And this leads to an overall like scale-independent factor that we have to imagine.
How many electrons there should be in total, right, on large scales? Guess the question is how smoothly distributed they are. It's sort of like the electron bias or something is the issue.
I don't think that's right.
I mean, baryon density. So we kind of know how many electrons there are.
You don't know how much is neutral and how much is charged.
Mostly ionized.
It's mostly ionized.
I mean, maybe there's... I think probably maybe 90%, 95%.
Right, but here we would like to get... Okay, we are not totally agnostic about it, but we do not know this quantity to percent level,
yeah,
right?
On large scales, I would have thought we kind of do, because it should follow the overall, you know... Not around galaxies, it's confusing, right? But on large linear scales, like you're talking about here, I wouldn't have thought it was...
And but the uncertainty on BV comes from the fact that we do not know the number of electrons on the small scale, right? Well, we measure a large-scale velocity field. The way in which we measure this large-scale velocity field is by knowing how much KSC comes from a single cluster. So it does matter that we do not know exactly how much matter is in a cluster.
Both large and small scales going into this.
Yeah, so BV is an integral over the small scales.
Right.
Integral with small scales.
So you kind of do know, have to know that electron
passing
in some sense.
Right. So these are the important parameters to marginalize over here, BG and BV, while cosmological parameters are not really an issue because they don't give this 1 over k square behavior. Of course, one could have calibration effects in the detector. That would be another thing one that could give such effects. But there's one, this is maybe another nice thing to point out here, is that we are not depending on perfect auto-calibration of this galaxy, of the galaxy power, since our constraining power comes from the cross-power spectrum between this PVG and PGG, like calibration errors in PGG do not matter so much for us, and this actually could give additional confidence in the results of this method. All right, so let me just... go to the actual results. So this would be for CMBS4 and LSST. And we find that these are for different redshift spins here. For galaxies alone, the total combined sigma FNL is order 1. While if you add this KSC effect here, you get this here, this curve, and they combine to sigma FNL of 0.4. So it's for LSST and CMBS4 is about a factor of 3 improvement. So this is a really nice improvement. So you also get now, this makes it possible that to target this multi-field inflation threshold of FNL equals 1. And in addition, as I said, our method would be more robust to galaxy auto-calibration errors. Now it's true that sometimes if you look at LSST forecasts, they try to be more clever in their data analysis by doing internal sample variance cancellation between different galaxy species. In that case, but it's not known how well such measures will work. And in this case, the improvement factor would be less than that if you can do this internal sample variance cancellation. We have in our paper plot actually how it goes then, but it's still at least a factor of 2 or so, even if you can do that. And more near term, so really in the next years, we can do this with SO and DESI, and their sigma FNL will be of order 1 with this method. And the improvement factor, I believe, was about to DESI alone with this, with scale-dependent bias, was about a factor of 1.7. So it's still a nice improvement even for these
near-term experiments. So you have to put these in 3D, right? The galaxies. So for LSST, you're assuming you're going to do this with photosees, or
right. Okay, so that's actually a good point. So yeah, our forecast includes LSST photosee errors.
Not so great, right?
But it's not. For this thing, it's actually not such a big problem since we want to measure the large scale, the large, so this this FNL effect is on large scales because of this 1 over k square thing. So the Fotozy errors don't matter that much for this forecast, actually. But what would matter a lot is catastrophic redshift errors. And these are a potential concern. Because our method works so well because our cross-correlation coefficient between the reconstructed velocity field and the large-scale galaxy field that we need for sample variance cancellation, this cross-correlation coefficient is really high. It's higher than 99%. Now, if you have like 1% or 5% catastrophic Fotozy errors, then you will totally spoil this cross-correlation coefficient, and this is a concern. So you wouldn't have this for DESI, and we also like we want to forecast this for Spherex, but this is also not a problem. But for LSST, catastrophic redshift errors can be a problem.
I'm still trying to think. Fotozy errors are probably like 0.1, right?
Yeah.
0.1 is big in parsecs. So I would have thought that would be hurting you even on the very large scales.
Not really. So I actually have this very plot somewhere. I think. Maybe I'll finish this, and if we still have time, I'll look in the backup slides. I think I have a plot where it sees how the signal to noise depends on the Fotozy error. Good. Right. So here I have another plot to illustrate the sample variance cancellation again to make this clear. So if you have only galaxies here, and you raise the galaxy densities, and you raise it further and further and further and further. Actually, FNL constraint does not get better anymore. And the reason why this happens is that this measurement is dominated by sample variance, so by the number of actual large-scale modes you have. And so measuring them more and more precisely doesn't help you at all. However, with our method, you do the sample variance cancellation, where what matters is the relative amplitude of matter and galaxy mode. And this relative amplitude is not stochastic. So the more galaxies you have, it gets better and better and better and better. And so LSST is somewhere here, I think. But this is not LSST doesn't get you all the galaxies there are. So if you had even better surveys in the far off future, say at the time when CMB and HD will be built or so, in principle, this is far from saturated, so this goes down further. So this method, could in principle you could get 0.1 or so constraints at some point from this kind of method. So this is another nice thing.
Why is it that you say it's not a stochastic? Is that the ratio of what is not a stochastic?
So these two modes here, right? So this here, so you measure both the unbiased matter mode from the KSC and you measure the biased galaxy mode here from galaxies. And the relation of these two, so delta G is just this stuff here times delta M. So if you divide by delta M cancels out and you get a non-stochastic ratio.
So there's the single field consistency relation for prediction of FNL from the single field.
Right,
this is. Can you that down to 10 to the minus 2, I guess?
I think it's, yeah, this. So there are two things. For one thing, this is still like at least an order of magnitude less than smaller than what we forecast here. But the other thing also, I think for single field inflation, isn't the FNL term pure gauge and not actually physical? Isn't that the final conclusion? As far as I know, for really single field inflation,
there's no physics.
Contents in the FNL is just a gauge artifact. There's no point in measuring it. Of course, it has equilateral non-Gaussianities, but these are not directly measured in this.
So, this seems unphysical to me that you're saying that if you know the matter density exactly for a single mode, then you know the number of galaxies exactly?
No. If you had infinite amount of galaxies, you would know the mode of galaxies with infinite precision.
There would be a stochasticity in it, but I mean, even if the number is infinite, there would be a stochasticity. It's because it's not that just the number of galaxies give you the shot noise. I mean, there is just randomness in nonlinear dynamics. So that's the thing that puzzles me.
We want to measure very large scale modes, right?
Yeah.
So it's a linear thing. Of course, this approximation is not entirely sample variance cancellation thing. What this doesn't know about is that there's a limited number of halos in the universe, for example. So even if you get all the halos in the universe, at some point there will still be some shot noise left.
Right.
So it has to. the fact is,
I'm just saying is you seem to be pushing things so far down that you have to worry about that instead of saying that okay, you're
close to zero. I think we're still pretty far from that. So these halos here, the size of halos that you need to go to galaxy densities like this is still something reasonable. I have that somewhere, but it's still in solar masses. I don't remember. It's still 10 to the 9 solar masses still or something like that. So it's not. So this effect is not yet coming in. But yeah, there are some mathematical approximations that in the end, of course, fundamentally there is a limit on how well FNL can be measured with all the modes in the universe.
The number of halos, because all the halos are correlated with each other. Right? If you take away Milky Way, then all the satellites will also go away. So it's not just the number of halos, it could be a large number. The point is that nonlinear structure are just, I mean, there's some stochastic on a small scale, even if you see everything.
Yeah, so I agree with that. So that at some point, all primordial information at some point is washed out, right? At some scale. So the true number of underlying. So the trick with this scale-dependent bias is that you get more, that you move information from small scales, whether or not from small scales into large scales, basically. But there is still a limited number. There's still a limited number fundamentally of how of how small you can go in small scale structure. But I think we're pretty far away from this limit, like from the point where all matter just collapses to one clump and you're some below the genes mass, and so there's no information anymore. So, you seem skeptical?
No, the reverse.
Okay. All right.
This one's about stochastic bias, right?
Yeah.
So in simulations on large scales, you know, the bias is not stochastic more than the bounds on stochasticity are below 1% in simulations.
Right.
Yeah.
So the question is that sigma FNL? What are we talking about here? So where would that plateau be there? I mean, the 1% that you're talking about.
No, I mean, that's an upper limit for the simulations, right? You know,
right.
There's no detected evidence for any stochasticity on large scales.
So then I guess we can talk about how much stochasticity you do expect from nonlinearities.
Yeah, that's right. It goes like k squared, right, compared to a constant. And so at k of 10 to the minus, whatever, 3 or something you're talking about, it should be quite small.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just ask about what you were saying about single field inflation? Are you saying that if it's really single field inflation, that if you measure the bias on constant z slices or something like that, you do see this 1 over k squared contribution of the bias at the FNL equals 10 to minus 2, but there's some other slice where it literally vanishes?
I don't know this in enough detail, but I do know that it was debated for a while whether FNL and single field inflation, FNL local, is an actual observable prediction or whether it's all gauge, and as far as I know, it was researched to be solved to be all gauge. Now, what exactly this will mean for the power galaxy power spectrum here, I'm not sure. There's a predicted floor for equilateral non-Gaussianities from single phase inflation, and that is something one could measure, just not with this method. Last slide for something, an idea that actually Neil had for us, and we want to forecast for a long time, but we haven't really gotten to doing this, is that in our crosspower between the galaxies and velocities, here at H for halo, so velocities and galaxies, there is also this factor f, right? This is the growth rate that you know from the redshift space distortion term. It also appears here. And actually, we also get sample variance cancellation on this in principle, if our method can also improve constraints on the behavior of the scale factor with k, as many people have forecasted, so for neutrino masses here, there's some scale dependence of this f of k due to the neutrino mass, and there's also for the equation of state parameter, there's another. So if you have a non-trivial equation of state parameter, this also gives you a certain scale dependence of f. And so the hope is that maybe through these two effects that one can get interesting constraints on these two parameters. But I would say we haven't really finally concluded on whether or not this is true. But this shows you another thing, that this new KSC velocity reconstruction is an interesting probe that hasn't been so much thought about, but is a near-term probe, so it could have interesting consequences for interesting observables. So yeah, so this is something we hope to finalize at some point. All right, so that's it. So as I said, so KSC tomography is an interesting probe for cosmology and astrophysics. These two power spectra here are the observables. We have this bispectrum approach that has kind of clarified how previous estimators are related to each other and whether or not they are optimal. Then with this one special case of this bispectrum approach is this large-scale radial velocity reconstruction that I discussed. It gives you these super low noise measurements of the largest scales for radial modes. It's a new interesting observable. And it's like the most natural immediate application to it is to improve FNL constraints. And that seems to be working out with realistic data and all the systematic effects that we know about, except for instrument calibration and catastrophic photosensitivity errors. I guess these are still these are too hard for theory, I guess. Anyway, this is an interesting method for upcoming experiments. OK, thank you very much.
Comment that just to remind people that some of us have been doing this no sample variance in the velocity matter comparison way back since the 90s, of course, not using KSC but using classical distance indicators, right? Every time I make this point that we can measure F without any variance, the RSD people, you can see them struggling and trying to compute because they don't get this basic idea that it's just a direct comparison of the same waves.
Okay, I don't know that. So then, have you done it on actual data of velocity surveys?
This is the 90s.
Okay.
This field has a long history.
Velocity surveys aren't done that much anymore, right?
With supernovae, Tully Fisher.
Right. Okay.
Right. Same basic idea.
Okay. Interesting. Thanks.
But of course, I mean, if you look at that history, you see that the systematic effects is really what limits you, not the stochastics. So it's probably something to keep in mind.
Maybe true here as well.
That's exactly something to keep in mind. Yeah.
So you have the problem with the scaling with the reaction number density for example.
That's one?
Yeah. It looks like this
car
looks
Saturated. So Saturated, Saturated because there is an actual CMB experiment in here. So at some point you get so many galaxies that we are limited not by the number of galaxies, but the CMB experiment. And this was CMB S4. So if you wanted to go to even lower one, you would need an even better CMB experiment, like CMB in HD, and then this curve would not would stay like would continue to scale like this. Yeah, but the noise for this velocity reconstruction depends on small scale physics, right? So this noise term, so we need this velocity estimator that I discussed, and there is this factor PGG, which is the total galaxy power, which plus the shot noise and the shot noise, and there's the CMB. Sorry, and if you put this one through like the shot noise and make it infinitely small, then you still have this term here, CL tot, which is the total CL plus the noise in the CMB experiment, and this term will still limit your quality of this. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, let's start the speed again.